Good morning again. We will be in the book of Esther this morning as we continue to make our way through the pages of the Bible together and the story of Scripture and God's working amongst us. And I just have to ask this morning, have you ever been to a good play? Well, you know, if you've been to a good play, that there are at least two people that you never see on the stage with whom you could never enjoy the production. The first of those people that you probably will see is likely given some great billing, but you'll never see them. For example, if you went to see the play Hamlet, you would probably be given notice that the play was written by William Shakespeare. But for several reasons, you will not see him on stage at any time. The other person that you may or may not know and may or may not be introduced to is the director. The bigger the production, the greater the chance that you've heard of the director, even if you're not related to them. In this morning's text, and actually in the whole book of the Bible that our text comes from this morning, the book of Esther, the author and director of all of life is not introduced and never takes a moment to come onto the stage. Yet for someone who is familiar with the faith of the Israelites and later the faith of the followers of Christ, it's not too difficult to see him peeking out around the curtains and to hear his prompts to the actors from off the stage. So this morning we're going to look at the play that is the book of Esther, played out in the Persian capital of Susa. And as we do, as we look at this play, we're going to look for the hand of God. We're going to listen to His voice from behind the scenes. And I think you'll agree with me that God, the director, is much more involved than might superficially be supposed. And so we're going to turn to Esther chapter 4, verse 13. Esther has already been chosen to be the queen of Ahasuerus, or by his Greek name, Xerxes, the king of Persia. And Xerxes was the son of Darius. And so we've looked at the rebuilding of the temple. We looked at Haggai and Zephaniah that came during the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. Well, now we're looking at a time during the reign of his son, Ahasuerus, the king of Persia. And so in 4:13, the story picks up. And it says, well, actually, I'm going to start with verse 12. It says, when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer, "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." And then skipping down to the 7th chapter and the 10th verse, I was having problems typing the other day. How about the 8th chapter, I think, beginning with the first verse and reading through the 10th verse? No, that's not it either. I meant chapter 7 and then starting with verse 1. Let's start all over again. So the king and Haman went to Queen Esther's banquet, and they were drinking wine on the second day. The king asked again, "Queen Esther, what is your petition, and it will be given to you? What is your request, even up to half the kingdom, and it will be granted?" Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor with you, Your Majesty, if it pleases you, grant me my life, and this is my petition, and spare my people. This is my request. And I and my people have been sold to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. If we had been merely sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is he, the man who has dared to do such a thing?" Esther said, "An adversary and enemy, this vile Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. The king got up in a rage, left his wine, and went out into the palace garden. But Haman realized that the king had already decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. And just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. The king exclaimed, "Will he even molest the queen while she is with me in my house?" As soon as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, said, "A pole reaching a height of 50 cubits stands by Haman's house. He had set it up for Mordecai, who spoke up to help the king. The king said, 'Impale him on it.' So they impaled Haman on the pole he had set up for Mordecai. Then the king's fury subsided." I apologize. I don't know what my problem is this morning. Not only don't I know where to read, I can't read. You know, some days you just get off to that start and that's the way it's going to go. Well, we begin to see God's hand, and the more you've read the story and the more you've studied the story and the more you know about the history of Israel and the more that you understand about their faith, the more that it's clear that God is present, even though God is not named. Even though Yahweh, even though El or Elohim or Adonai or any of the other names that the Scriptures, the Old Testament Scriptures, use to refer to the covenant-making God of Israel, even though none of them are used in all of the chapters of the book of Esther, it's hard not to see the hand of God at work. And it begins with Mordecai. It begins, really, with Mordecai's challenge to Esther. At the very beginning of this challenge that Mordecai gives to Esther, he begins to get her to thinking about what God can do, about what God might do, about who God can use to do the things that He is going to do. And so Mordecai just kind of lays out the facts before Esther. And he says, "Here's the situation. Here's the situation. Haman is going to have the Jews killed. All the Jews were set up for destruction." If you read back a little bit in the book of Esther, you find that Haman had gone to the king and King Ahasuerus and convinced him that the Jews were not loyal subjects. And that the Jews not just were not loyal subjects, but being disloyal, they were also, well, they were problem causers. They were going to continue to rise and cause insurrection within the nation of Persia. And so Haman convinced Ahasuerus to sign this decree for the destruction and the annihilation of the people of Israel, or for the Jews that had been scattered throughout all of the nations. And The thing was Haman wasn't going to do it. Ahasuerus' army wasn't going to have to do it. It was simply, we're going to let their enemies take them out. Where we're going to let revenge seek its course and play out and let the Jews be annihilated. And so Mordecai is laying out these facts to Esther, and then he looks at her and he says, this whole thing that has transpired. You see, it began back when Ahasuerus was throwing this great party. He had been throwing this party. He'd been showing off his riches and his wealth and his status to his royal officials for some time. And finally, there came this seven-day banquet at the end of 180 days of fanfare and showing off. He says, now we're going to party it up. And he invites the people to have this party. And in the midst of it, he calls his queen to come, Queen Vashti, and she won't. For whatever reason, Vashti says no. And we don't know why. The story doesn't go into those details, and we could guess, we could conjecture, but all we know is that Vashti didn't come. She was deposed as the queen, and this concept came up to one of the officials of Ahasuerus that they should have this beauty pageant, and all of the beauties of the kingdom should be brought in, and one by one they should get their chance to try to convince the king that they should be the queen. Well, Esther wins the beauty contest and she becomes the queen, and so now Mordecai looks at her in this situation as Haman's edict has gone out, and he says to her, who knows but what you've come to this position for such a time as this. Well, what he's saying is, have you ever considered, Esther, that there is a very good likelihood that God has allowed you to become the queen so that you have a position and can use that position to save His people? He doesn't say it in those words, but what he's saying, knowing the faith of the Jewish people, he's saying God can act and God can use anyone. And at this point, it looks like God has chosen to use you, Esther. And so Mordecai lays out the challenge, and in laying out the challenge to Esther, you see the hand of God. Well, only if you're looking and expecting it, but you can see the hand of God. Then we turn from Mordecai, we turn to Esther, and we look at Esther's response, not the original response. Her original response is probably what most of us would have said, is, no, I want to save my own skin, if at all possible, leave me alone. Actually, she said, don't you know that anybody who goes before the king unbidden is probably going to die? But, basically she said, I want to save my skin. But it's her second response that she gives to Mordecai as he continues to challenge her with this concept, with this idea that God has placed her in this position of power, in this position of influence for a particular purpose. And we begin to see in Esther's response that God is there. It begins with a step of faith. It begins with a step of faith. In our scriptures, it says that Esther asked Mordecai to spread the word and to ask the people, the Jewish people around Susa, to fast with her. Now, it only says to fast. But here's what I understand about the Jewish people. If they were going to fast, there was a purpose behind it. And most often, the purpose of fasting was to seek the favor of God. And so even though the author of the book of Esther doesn't come out and plainly say that Esther said, go to the people and ask them to pray, by asking them to fast with her, And then she says, not only am I asking you to fast, but I'm going to fast, and my maids with me will fast. She's saying, we're going to have this great big citywide prayer meeting, and I want you all to be involved. Because Esther had enough faith in God that God would work if she if she approached him in prayer. If she and the people were to approach them or him in prayer and seek his favor and to seek his will, she believed that God would act. And so we see the presence of God. And we see the presence of God in Esther's courage, where she gives herself, as it is, to the hand of God to do with her as he pleased. As she says, I will go, and if I die, I die. As she has a change of heart, she has a change of courage, if you were. She goes from being afraid that she might die to being willing to die, because at this point in time, she realizes that it's not just herself. It's Mordecai. It's the people of Susa. It's the Jews of the Persian kingdom whose fate hangs in the balance. And so she takes courage and then she moves. She moves by seeking the good graces of the king. They always say that a way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right? Well, evidently Esther believed that to be true, because she prepared this feast and then invited the king and invited Haman. And they came and they had this feast, and they sat and they ate and they drank, and they probably drank some more, looking at the history of the Persian Empire. And when they were done drinking some more, they probably drank again and drank some more after that. And then they started making decisions. Not sure how that works, but that's what it looks like they were used to. And so when he was full of good food and full of spirits, he asked Esther what it was she wanted. And Esther, deciding to thicken the plot a little bit, either that or being a little cold feet, I'm not sure. Scripture doesn't tell us exactly why she decided to have a second banquet. I think it's just to make sure that the king was really hearing what she said and really prepared to act upon what she wanted. And so she has this second banquet, and when they are good and full and full of spirits, he asks again, what is your petition and what is your plea? What is it that I can do for you, Esther? And Esther just lays out the facts. She asks upon and begs upon the king's good graces. She doesn't just come out and say, save my people. She begins by making sure he's ready to listen. And she lays out the facts about those things that are about to take place at the hands of the enemies of the Jews. And then, when the king is good and riled up and asks the question, who would do such a thing, only then does Esther point the finger at Haman. She doesn't tell the king what she wants him to do. She doesn't say, get rid of Haman. She simply says, the man is Haman, the evil and vile Haman. And so after Mordecai's challenge and Esther's response, then we very much begin to see the work of God. Because both Mordecai and Esther simply step back and allow God to do his work. It begins with, as we look at Mordecai's statement to Esther. Theologian and author Joyce Baldwin says, true, he is not named. But when Mordecai says to Esther, "And who knows whether you have come to this kingdom for such a time as this?" He is revealing his belief in an overruling of history. Esther's choice as queen has been no random chance, but the work of the director of world affairs, so that through her acts of deliverance, or through her, this act of deliverance could be effected. You see, Mordecai paints the facts and he sets the situation, and then he just steps back to see what God will do. Mordecai doesn't continue to push and to prod Esther and say, "This is what you should do. This is how you should handle the situation. This is where things need to go." No, Mordecai just prepped Esther and then stepped back and watched to see what God would do. And throughout it, we begin to see that God is at work. God was at work when Esther was chosen by Ahasuerus as the second queen of the story. God was at work when, if you read the story, shortly after Esther becomes queen, Mordecai hears about a plot to kill Ahasuerus, and he informs Esther, who informs the king. God was at work in allowing Mordecai to hear that plot. God was at work as Esther was in the palace. And what Mordecai is saying to Esther is that God will use you if you will let Him. God will use you if you will let Him. And I think many times God would look at us in situations around us and say, "God would use you if you would just let Him." Instead of trying to dictate the plans and carry out everything that you think needs to be done, if you would simply let God use you, He will. But then there's the part that God, or Mordecai, says to Esther. He says, "But if you won't, Esther, if you won't take this opportunity to use your position for good, God's deliverance will come from somewhere else. God will succeed in His plan for the people that He has chosen. God will carry out what it is He wants to do for us as a people, even if you choose not to act." And we begin to see the work of God as God is taking care of things. And then we see the events at the second banquet, and we begin to see that God's hand is there. And again, I like the way that Joyce Baldwin puts this. She says, "Human agents were unwitting instruments of the one who is the unseen ruler of events." Human agents were the unwitting instruments of the one who was or is the ruler of unseen events. It begins with Haman's self-serving. We didn't look at a lot of it, but if you read through the story, you find that Haman is a very self-serving, self-glorifying, self-gratifying man. Haman would be well to be a star on an NFL football team or an NBA basketball team, where he could direct all of the glory of all of the good that was happening that day to himself. And Haman was about self-glorification and about others glorifying Haman. He was raised to a very high position under the king in the Persian Empire, and he began to... Well, he was supposed to be honored by the people, and when Haman refused to bow down, when Haman refused to give him glory and honor that Haman thought he deserved, he began to become irritated. And then he began to become aggravated. And then he began to become angry. And he decided to seek his revenge. Hence the reason that he was trying to have the whole of the Jewish nation killed. Because it wasn't good enough just to get rid of Mordecai. Mordecai won't bow, but because Mordecai won't bow, all of the Jews deserve to die. And he talks to his friends about how high a position he has, and he brags about his position, and he brags about his wealth, and he brags about his authority, and he does all of this, and then he brags about the fact that he is the only one besides King Ahasuerus who's been invited to this banquet. And so when he comes the second day, I'm sure he is full of himself and proud and eager. Well, they had to bring him the second day, but that's another story. But still excited that he is the only one who's been invited to the queen's banquet. And so Haman's self-serving is part of the plan that God uses. And then there's Harbona's intel. Harbona, the servant of the king, is there, and as soon as the king's anger is exposed at Haman, Harbona comes up with this piece of intel about the pole, the stake, the maybe gallows, your translation might say, that Haman had built to have Mordecai impaled on, or hung on, depending on your translation as well. But he had this idea, this concept, Haman did, that he would take out Mordecai in this very public and very painful way. And instead, Harbona says, "Hey, look." Well, we're not told how Harbona knew about it, but Harbona did. And Harbona just simply passes on the message to the king. Oh, yeah, and by the way, there's already a pole that's been erected right next to Haman's house. You see, Harbona didn't have to know that, but he did. And at just the right time, in just the right situation, that information becomes important. And then the human agents and the becoming unwitting instruments, Xerxes' rage and violence come out. And to read about Xerxes historically, he was a rather rageful and a rather violent king. Oh, he was okay at times, but he would make these snap decisions at times and then have to stand behind them. You couldn't lose face. And so he stood behind them. But at times, he became very angry very easily. And he was not above allowing some very cruel things to take place because of his rage and his violence. And so at this moment, when Esther reveals to Ahasuerus, her husband, the state of things because of Haman's plot, the king gets angry. And he steps outside to try to think. He comes back in to see Haman still trying to manipulate the situation. Haman is trying to manipulate Esther in some way to save his own skin. Ahasuerus sees it as an attempt to kill Esther, and so immediately he flies into a rage and anger. And with Harbona's intel, he has Haman stuck on his own pull. And throughout the story we see from time to time that God's hand just is there. That the director, the playwright, is there and he's making sure that everything is happening according to the script. And I think you would agree with me that God is the active director of the world's affairs. He is the unseen ruler of events. And His touches are all over this production. And even though it might not look like it, God is in control. And this is really the message of the book of Esther, that God is in control. I think it might be easier for us to see and for us to comprehend this if we were suffering as some of our brothers and sisters are around the world today. If we were suffering unjust persecution, if we were suffering the possibility of death, if we were suffering as Christians are around the world, we might be a little more inclined to see the hand of God at work behind the story of Esther. You see, sometimes when things go well, we don't see what God is doing. We don't see that God is at work as we should. But in stories like the story of Esther, we see that even when we cannot see Him, even when we cannot hear Him, we must have faith that He is there and that He is acting according to His Word and according to His character. That God is there for us. I also believe, though, that we must be careful. We must be careful that we don't believe that if we get all the details right, that everything will work out fine. That if we simply pray the right prayer or say the right things or act in the right ways, that God will work everything out according to our will and desire. After all, if you read the writer of Hebrews and what he says at the end of chapter 11 after listing several faithful witnesses who are cheering us on, he says some of them were sawed in two. Some of them were put to death with the sword. Some were destitute. Others were afflicted amongst other things. Yet even then, even when things don't turn out the way we want, the story of Esther reminds us to look for and listen for the author and the director, and to keep faith that He's in control of all things. Even when we don't see what God is doing, even when we don't hear the voice of God as clearly as we might at other times, we're called to have faith that He is God and He's in control. So this morning, if you don't know Him as your Savior, if you don't know Him as your Lord, then I believe that one of the reasons you're here is so that you can hear of His love and hear of His mercy, so that you can come and follow Him. And since that's the case, we're going to sing one more song. And if you need to make a commitment or make a decision this morning, we'd love to visit with you about that. We'd love to celebrate with you if you're at the point of committing your life to Him through the waters of baptism. Or maybe this morning you find that you're not sure, you're not seeing and hearing the hand of God, and you just need somebody to pray with you. We'd love to do that as well. If you need something this morning, we'd encourage you to come as we stand together and sing, or to visit with myself or one of the elders following service this morning.